The Conference Committee of Economic Development Jobs comes to order. This is the second meeting. And the House would like to thank the Senators for their patience and endurance. And I thought it was important that we have this meeting so that we can proceed as with the negotiations as soon as our numbers come out. And that, and I certainly didn't think that we wanted to talk about this stuff on Saturday.
I guess again, we're not.
But you wouldn't have if I had had it. Okay, let's open your big books to the spreadsheet, the Senate spreadsheet. We went over on Tuesday night, Monday night, Monday afternoon. Yes, it was daylight, wasn't it? Monday afternoon, and it was presented by Mr. Jensen. And do you have any additions or clarifications? Because in the next tab, we have the House spreadsheet. And Mr. Soderberg, you prepared that. And so if you have any additions or clarifications, it's time to hear them right now.
Madam Chair and members, yes, if we look at the tab 2, it'll be the House spreadsheet. The differences, I think, between Dave Jensen's presentation and this presentation, and I'm not going to go through all the line by line, I think that was done the other day, is this is a global spreadsheet. It looks at both the House and the Senate's positions, both one time as well as ongoing. And I think that Dave's presentation had, it also does not include Commerce, which was kind of up in the air, and now Commerce is out, is going to be going over to Environment and Energy. I'll just highlight very briefly, if you go to page 9, it kind of gives you the summary of the bills. If you look at line 35, these are the direct appropriations in the respective bills. On the general fund, the differences in 08-09 is the House is $28.6 million under the Senate, very close in 10 and 11. Of course, there are some items of difference in other funds, direct appropriated funds. The Workforce Development Fund, the House is 10.55 million over the Senate in both years. Likewise, with the State Government Special Revenue Fund, the House is over the Senate, owing to the Senate doing the Governor's Initiative in the Department of Labor and Industry with code consolidation. The House did not do that initiative. So, in the Workers' Comp Special Fund, the House is about $2.2 million a year over the Senate. TANF funds was... the House had TANF funds in their housing programs. The Senate had no TANF funds, so that difference is $6.1 million, $1.5 million in the first biennium. So the total of all appropriations is about a $5.9 million difference, looking at both bodies' respective positions, both one time and then if you go down to line 469, it's the last item on the page. It shows the net general fund differences. And the reason that the differences grow from the 20, this is just the general fund, is that where the House revenue had revenue raisers, the Senate in combination lost money to the general fund. So the net effect on the general fund is $369,439,000. In the House in 08-09, the Senate's comparable number is $405,623,000. And the differences are in, for the respective biennium on the right-hand columns. The other item that is in your packet is, and I think Dave and I Dave also has prepared one of these. It's just a comparison between the one-time items in the respective bill, in the respective bodies, for the accounts. And as you can see, if you look to the bottom of that, next, on line 94, the total for, one-time appropriations in the House bill, or in the House is, for these accounts is $81,735,000. For the Senate, it's $105,529,000. The difference is $23,794,000 in the one-time money. So.
Thank you. And I was told today that the higher ed spreadsheet and the higher ed committee will carry the money for the bio at Mayo.
You were told that?
Yes.
Huh. Like we're told we were carrying it.
What time?
You got any idea?
I think, Madam Chair, I think the last I heard is that they're going to set aside the Mayo initiative kind of away from both the higher ed and the economic development until they, and the monies that go along with it. And there's a higher discretion as to where it's going. So it's just kind of, I think right now it's being pulled out of both spreadsheets or out of both bottom lines until there is a agreed upon decision to stick it somewhere. And we heard that about 6 p.m., I believe.
35th Amendment.
And that's about,
yeah.
And that's about the time I heard also. The bio and Mayo funding is yet to be determined.
Madam Chair?
Representative Mahoney?
That was the U of M Mayo partnership.
That was it?
I knew that's what you're thinking.
That was it. Thank you. So, Ms. Newman, do you want to begin on the comparison of the side-by-side, Article 1.
Madam Chair and members, sort of in accordance with our conversation earlier, Ms. Baker and Ms. Sliwa and Ms. Receiver and myself are going to go through the side-by-side, and we're not going to go over the appropriation riders. We're going to skip to more of the policy and resource creation. So we would start on page R25 of the revised side by side. And the first house provision would be on line 20, section 11, the bioscience zone designation. This is a requirement that the commissioner establish some criteria for expanding the zones, and that those criteria include the capacity of a community for adequate resources and infrastructure to support this bioscience, and that they have and that would include post-secondary institutions, healthcare, and existing bioscience companies. The next page, R26, is the creation of the Nanotechnology Development Fund. This would be a partnership between the state, the private sector, and academic institutions to assist in the use of nano instrumentation. It would be targeted at companies with fewer than 50 employees, but companies with 51 to 100 employees who are at risk for adverse financial impact if they don't get to use at nano instrumentation would be a candidate for these grants. The grants would be in a range of between $500 and $20,000 within the biennium. The Department of Employment and Economic Development would administer this. Line 22.6 on the bottom of page R27, section 13 of the House bill is a work group, and this refers back to provision that Representative Greiling had looking at the impact of wage subsidies. So this is a work group established to evaluate those wage subsidies.
Ms. Baker? Ms. Chair. Ms. Chair, on page R28, section 16 is just provides for 3.25% of employee compensation raises, which are built into the appropriations in our bill. Section 17, this is part of it. We took the building code fund transfers where they consolidated the building code fees from lots of different areas and consolidated them into one code fund. And so this is just part of the language of that. This also takes $100,000 from the methamphetamine laboratory cleanup revolving loan fund and transfers it to the small community wastewater treatment account.
Madam Chair and members, page R29 begins the House Article 3. This data from safety and education programs for loggers was an amendment from Representative Amdahl on the House floor during passage of the bill, and it just specifies the information that is to be considered public data that's collected from loggers and their employees who attend established safety and education programs.
Pages.
Ms. Baker.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Chair, members, pages R30 and R31, sections 20, 21, 22, and 23 on the Senate side are all connected to the consolidation of the building code funds. In current law, the inspection fees and permit fees are remitted to the Department of Administration, the Commissioner of Administration, who puts them into a special fund, special revenue fund. These sections eliminate that pathway and eliminate the special revenue fund and the statutory appropriation to the Commissioner of Administration.
Madam Chair and members, page R31, line 22 of the House language in section 2, this is a provision that requires that 75% of the funds from the Wagner-Payser Act, which funds workforce centers, be used for services directly to unemployed and underemployed workers, and that only 25% of those funds can be used to promote for business-related services, and that some of these funds can be used to establish an internet-based labor exchange. The next page, R32, is the Greater Minnesota Business Development Investment Fund, the creation. This is Representative Moe's initiative. It specifies that the state investment by the commissioner in any eligible organization can exceed $2 million. It contains the requirements for the state investments, the investments that are authorized, and actually establishes this new fund. Page R33, House Section 4 and Section 5, this is from the Department of Employment and Economic Development Policy Bill, and it's the Contaminated Site Cleanup and Development Grant Account. The language in the Senate and the House bills here are the same. In House Section 4 and 5 and Senate Section 36 and 37. Madam Chair, going to page R34, the language in House Section 6 and Senate Section 38 are also the same language, and this is also from the deed policy bill. Page R35, section House 7 is the commissioner's discretion. This is the redevelopment grant, and it says that in fiscal years 2008 and 2009, 75% of the available funds have to be used in rural in greater Minnesota, and that starting in fiscal 2010, at least 50% of the available funds have to be used in greater Minnesota. The House has slightly different language on R 35.
Madam Chair, members, at this point I'm not prepared to discuss the differences between, because I was preparing for another conference committee tonight that got canceled. I'm Senate counsel on two budget committees, so at this point I don't have the details of the differences between the two. I will by the next time we meet.
Okay. That's fine. Ms. Newman?
Madam Chair and members, on page R 35, House Section 8 and Senate Section 40, the language of this page, the new language about the redevelopment costs related to expansion of a bioscience business in Minnesota, that's the same language in the Senate and the House. And then the language in Clause B, the last three lines of the page for both the Senate and the House appear to be the same language. The link and page R 36. It goes into page R 37, line 28 of the House and line 34. This is Department of Employment and Economic Development language. Establishing that the Minnesota Trade Office is the state's office of protocol.
And is that the same?
Yes, I'm sure.
A little bit of a difference up on the top of the page.
Right, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair Abbott. Madam Chair and Senator Thomas. The language at the top of page R 36 is not the same in the Senate and the House bill. In the Senate or the House bill, it's the requirement that at least 25% of the money is used for sites located outside the metro area, and the House bill is 50%. So there is a Senate bill. I'm sorry. Yes, House is 25%. Senate is 50%. Old habits die hard, I'm sorry.
Please continue.
Page R 37, line 28 of the House, subdivision 4. These are the workforce development intermediaries, and this is language from a bill of Representative Clark that segues into the pathways program in section 11. And it defines who these workforce development intermediaries are. Page R 38, at the top of the page, the House has language that the Senate does not have. Section 12 of the House bill and Section 42 of the Senate bill deal with the duplicated worker program. And it is the same language about extending the definition of duplicated workers to include those who have been terminated or have received a notice of termination of employment as a result of a plant closing or substantial layoff. Page R 39, House Section 13, Senate Section 43 is the collection of the special assessment, and it both bills eliminate the rollback of the rate from 0.10% to 0.085, which was to have begun in 2008. Section 14 of the House bill is an amendment that was added by Representative Pawlowski in the Finance Committee. This is the designation of the workforce service areas, and it requires that local officials' input be received before any redesignation occurs. Page R 40, House, Section 15 and Section 44, it's the same language on, this is the Urban Initiative Board and Nonprofit Corporation loans that the interest rate charge cannot exceed the Wall Street Journal prime rate plus 4%. And it has language about the origination fee and that the nonprofit corporation may retain the amount of the origination fee. Page R40, line 32 of the House, section 10 is the Small Growth Acceleration Program. This was Representative Mahoney's bill. It's to help qualified companies implement technology and business improvements and bridge the gap between market pricing for technology and what the companies can afford to pay. It designates what a qualified company is, that it's manufacturing-related or manufacturing employees, 100 or fewer full-time equivalent employees. The rest of the language specifies the applications, the use of funds, service agreements, and reporting requirements. Take R42, R43, R44, and part of page R42 and R43 are the meatpacking workers' bill of rights and the ombudsman language on the House side, and it requires a number of it specifies the information that has to be posted. It establishes a right to adequate facilities and adequate equipment and training, and establishes an ombudsman to enforce the enumerated rights and information in this. And there is an appropriation for this in the appropriation section of the bill. Page R44, House Section 19 is actually the Governor's recommendation. It's the arbitrator application fees that will statutorily are increased to $100 per year, and I believe that currently they're $25 a year. And this was something that is a spreadsheet item. Page R45, Section 20 of the House bill is a prohibition about employing anyone under the age of 18 in an establishment that serves or where liquor is consumed or in any task involved in serving, dispensing, or handling liquor on the premises. There are some carve-outs for minors who reach the age of 16 to be dishwashers and bus persons and things like that. Mm-hmm. Page R40.
Representative Mahoney.
May I ask, do you know where the prohibition related to
reducing
the presence of liquor
came from?
Is that someone's bill
that you
know? Representative
Rufino. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I had this bill a couple of years ago because it was brought to my attention by the person who ran the bar up at the Giants Ridge Hotel up there, and the more I checked into it, it seemed like nobody was obeying the law, so we had a hearing with them. After the committee had passed, and it made it to the floor. I don't even know if a lot of employers know that they have hostesses and that are working in restaurants that serve liquor, and if they're under, I believe, under 18 currently, they shouldn't be there. And so passed the bill, and I think the Republican Senate was going to put some kind of labor laws on it, so they never let the bill pass. So that's right, it's there. It's been in law for years, but I don't even think it's enforced or anything. And
works for me. I was just wondering who brought the bill.
And the hostilians who reminded me about it, and we put it in our bill.
Representative Gunther.
This is good carry out boys that carry food to beer out of the grocery store.
The council would have to answer that. I think it refers to the hospitality.
It's an establishment where liquor is sold, served, dispensed, or handled, and consumed on
the outside. So, Madam Chair.
Representative Rucavina.
You haven't been illegal. That's all we hear from the grocery store.
Thank you.
Where do they have people carrying groceries? Packages out of a grocery store.
Madam Chair, the Fairmont, Minnesota, before Walmart put us out of business, to carry groceries to everyone's car, ask them which store they'd like to put them in, and that's the way we handle our carry. We didn't have parts to pick up, we didn't have to push them on ourselves, have the cut. We took care of the customer.
I want to go to that store.
I know.
I wish I could.
I'm going to go there. Thank you. Ms. Newman?
Page R46, House Section 21, at the very bottom, it requires that OSHA enforcement personnel have to be located in areas of the state with a high incidence of workplace fatalities, injuries, and complaints. Page R47 begins, in both the Senate and the House, the Safe Patient Handling Program. And I'm not going to go through this piece by piece because they're actually fairly similar. There are some language differences in the definition section and actually grammar and syntax, but they are fairly similar provisions, and that runs through page R49 and up to R50. On page, those sections require that medical facilities establish safe patient handling committees in an effort to reduce work-related injuries in handling non-mobile patients. Page R50, Section 25.
Senator Thomasoni.
Madam Chair, Ms. Newman, I see the grant program is just a little bit different. Is it basically the same grant program? The grant programs, it looks like that's one of the differences in the language. Is it the same grant program with just different wording, or is it actually a different grant program?
Representative Thomasoni, it's basically the same grant program. The House has additional language that begins on line 41 that the 50% match requirement for facilities can be waived. If the healthcare facility experiences hardship that they can demonstrate that they get out of the match requirement and have additional time to meet the safe patient handling requirement. They get until 2012 to do this. Page R50, Section 25, line 42 is a severance. This deals with the way severance and other similar payments are handled with unemployment insurance benefits, and would say that the first $10,000 of severance, bonus, sick pay, or other payments whose annual salary is less than $75,000 would not be subject to the current delay provisions in the current law on unemployment insurance. Page R51, Section 26 of the House requires that the Department of Employment and Economic Development in their unemployment insurance benefit program have to make changes to the system that if when you're dialing in you want to talk to a real person, you can be diverted to a real person rather than having everything automated and electronic. Page R51, Section 27 and 28 of the House and Section 52 and 53 of the Senate. These, again, are from, this is deed length. This was in a deed housekeeping bill, and they are the same language for the Senate and the House. Page R52, Section 29 of the House and Section 54 of the Senate, these deal with the local rehabilitation facility boards, and it reduces
the membership from 9 voting members to 7 voting members, and it's the same language in the Senate and the House, and it removes the language that directs who has to be on this board. Section 30 of the House and Section 55 of the Senate, this is also department language about it's an integrated setting that says this is vocational rehabilitation language, and that the commissioner can designate a facility as an integrated setting after a site review. This is the same language in both in the Senate and the House, and this has implications for how a facility is reimbursed under the voc rehab program. Page R52, Section 31 of the House is the customer sales or service call center. This was a Representative Atkins bill. This says that essentially if you're calling in for customer service, and you are asked for any sort of financial information and you feel like you've dialed to a foreign operator or to a foreign country, that you can request to be transferred back to a person in the United States to deal with this. Page R53, House Section 32, this is local, specifies local planning assistance in regional development commissions or in regions that aren't served by regional development commissions. And it specifies that the local planning must be related to issues of regional or statewide significance. And then it lists some of the things that have to be addressed. Page R54, House Section 33, is language that would authorize the commissioner to increase the workforce enhancement fee. The current level is 0.1%. This would allow an increase to 0.12% of taxable wages. Section 34 of the House is a federal procurement liaison. This is in the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The purpose is to link small and medium Minnesota businesses with federal resources, with prime source contractors, and to establish a referral network to link Minnesota companies. This is a Representative Mahoney provision. Page R54, Section 35 requires that the Department of Labor and Industry has to have 3 OSHA inspectors in offices on the Iron Range and 1 in an office in Bemidji. Page R55, Section 36 is language that was amended on the floor. This Representative Rukavina carried a bill. This establishes a work group to look at issues that Minnesota has interested in setting federal trade policy. It specifies who has to be on it. It's business, labor, state government, administrative representatives, and the duties are on page 48, where it's enumerated that the work group has to determine the state's jurisdiction regarding federal trade policy and agreements, assess the current agreements and policies, look at the way the state interacts with the Office of the United States Trade Representative, examine trade policy models in other states, and prepare legislative recommendations for this working group.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther.
Representative Rukavina.
If you recall, we had language in here in the bill, and there was some concern. Former Representative Rhodes had testified on it. Then I don't know who actually, maybe Mr. Geldman can help me, who got together, but a working group did get together from the governor's administration and the AFL-CIO, and this is the compromise language that everybody agreed to.
Madam Chair, does this mean...
Representative Gunther.
Does this mean that we can't get anything after GATT if we don't want to?
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, there were, I think the governor was concerned about some of the NAFTA and GATT, and so this was, I think, proposed by the steel workers with the AFL-CIO backing, and maybe we can, you know, get out of, we're going to declare independence or something, I don't know. I think it's for future perspective, Representative Gunther.
You're using me to annex ourselves to Canada.
There you go.
Ms. Newman?
Madam Chair and members, page R56, House Section 37, Senate Section 91. This reverts back to the safe patient handling. The language is fairly similar. It requires the Department of Labor and Industry to conduct a study of how workers' comp insurance premiums could be reduced in recognition of compliance with these safe patient handling initiatives that are supported by the earlier language. The House in Section 38 establishes a work group to for ongoing study of the safe patient handling issue. House Section 39 on page R57, this is directs some rule changes relating back to the child labor laws with minors working in establishments that serve and dispense liquor. Section 40 of the House is the Public Facilities Authority funding. This is the intended use plan language. This is the governor's initiative, and it essentially says that cities like Maple Lake and Annandale, which were at the top of the list but are on the list rather, but have to wait for the resolution of a court case, don't fall off the list. They get transferred over to the next year.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
To that point, Ms. Newman, I think that this language was actually requested by Representative Erdahl, and we put it in. Representative Gunther brought it to the committee. I don't know if the governor had anything to do with it, but I'm sure he supports it.
Ms. Newman.
Madam Chair, the House repealer, this repeals a small business and targeted procurement report that is done by the Department of Administration, and the Department of Labor and Industry would love to get out from under. And they don't do it anyway.
Ms. Baker?
Madam Chair, the bulk of these repealers on the Senate side are connected with the construction code consolidation. They repeal things like special revenue funds and fees going into the specific special revenue funds, fees for inspections connected with water conditioning contractors, high-pressure piping, and just a variety of those types that will then be consolidated into one construction code. So this repeal language that is not needed anymore if the construction code fund is consolidated. We can get the actual language of all of these repealers to hand out also.
Chair.
Well, let's wait.
Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Maybe Representative Mahoney, or I see Representative Nelson was in the audience, but Ms. Baker, are our repealers for that? Because we have a lot of this same language or similar language in the bill. Are our repealers somewhere else then? Or didn't we repeal?
Representative Mr. Chair, ours are in later articles where we deal with plumbing, high-pressure piping, and the electrical.
So, Ms. Newman, we do have the same repealers, but they're somewhere else in
there.
Signed by saying?
Or
are they right in the language?
Madam Chair and Representative Medina, we don't do the same thing with the construction. So, no, we don't have these very same repealers, but we've got related repealers in other parts of the bill.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I believe these are the repealers that spend the money collected by the particular inspector division over to the general fund. And soon in the Senate bill, they do not go over to the general fund. In ours, we have not truly addressed our particular yet, and we will hopefully by Tuesday have complete language for you.
Good, I'm waiting for that.
I'm working on that, Madam Chair. I would hate to disappoint you.
I'm sure you won't disappoint. Thank you. Ms. Newman?
Madam Chair, members, page R58, Article 4 begins licensing and wages in the House bill. The Section 1 is the hair braiding language that requires anybody engaged in hair braiding for compensation as a profession to register with the Board of Cosmetology Examiners. It provides a definition of hair braiding and also establishes some training and curriculum requirements for hair braiders. Page R59, House Section 2 and Senate Section 45 relate to prevailing wage and subject the state's prevailing wage law to the commissioner's authority to examine records. And if the language is the same in both the Senate and the House bills. Section 3 and Section 46 are the same regarding the prevailing wage with the commissioner's compliance order authority, except the House language on line 9 and 10 also includes some whistleblower enforcement language that is added later in this bill that was Representative Clark's initiative. So the House's language has those additional provisions that the Senate language does not.
Right
here. That's the 1.82. Yes. 1.932. And there's a couple other grammatic changes that are just that grammar. Senate Section 4 it also relates to the whistleblower, and it allows the civil actions. This is again from Representative Clark's bill. Page R60, Section 5 is, these are, Madam Chair and members, while the language looks is substantially different, it is prevailing wage enforcement language, and the House and the Senate language all make provisions for civil court action, district court jurisdiction, and attorney fees and costs under the prevailing wage, but we do it in substantially different ways. Page R61, Section 8, this again relates to the whistleblower language of Senator Clark, and it directs the commissioner to conduct investigations that allege a violation of the whistleblower laws. Section 9, further down the page, establishes the procedure for these investigations. Page R62, Section 10 of the Senate gives the Commissioner of Labor and Industry expands his general authority to adopt rules to cover the prevailing wage laws. Section 11 are the record-keeping requirements and penalties, and this the expansion to include 177.44 through that brings in the prevailing wage laws. Page R63, Section 12, this is language that was a negotiated part of Representative Rukavina's House Bill 2083 that says in a contract for prevailing wage that the contract has to provide that the contracting authority can demand of a contractor to furnish copy of all payrolls, and that the contracting authority can examine all records paid to wages, records relating to wages paid. This can't override any other requirements that are already in law. This is in addition to that. Section 13 requires that prevailing wage information is posted in a conspicuous place by all contractors. Section 14 gives the department investigative authority and requires that they have at least 3 additional investigators to perform on-site reviews. And there is language in the appropriation section to pay for these additional investigative personnel. Page R64, Section 15 provides that after a commissioner issues a compliance order for prevailing wage violation, they can also issue a withholding order that the contract authority can stop making payments under prevailing wage. Section 16 of the House and Section 48 of the Senate begin the independent contractor language, and again, I won't go through these item by item. These are fairly similar provisions. They're not completely identical because I think that in some cases, because the House language came later than the Senate language, there were some additional amendments to the House language that the Department of Labor and Industry had suggested. The fee amounts, the House language deposits the fees in the general fund. The Senate language deposits those in the construction code funds and then statutorily appropriates those back to the commissioner for payment of the cost. And the House language has a direct appropriation to the department to pay for these. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members, the language on page R71 is additional independent contractor exemption language. On page R72, this was an amendment that Representative Breiling added in the Finance Committee to specify that performers in the recorded media industry are employees and not independent contractors. And it provides civil remedies for violations and a requirement that any court that finds violations of this has to transmit its facts and findings to the Commissioner of Labor and Industry, who can then notify other relevant state and federal agencies. Page R73, House Section 18 is again whistleblower language, and it sets forth activities which are prohibited under the whistleblower laws.
Ms. Newman, is that the whistleblower law that's in law now, or is that the whistleblower law that Representative Clark is adding to?
Madam Chair, this adds to the current law and is in addition to the additional language that Representative Clark has.
Representative Clark?
Madam Chair, I was just going to say that what I was doing with that law was amending existing law. So that's more of the amendment.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, page R74 and R75 are a continuation of the whistleblower law, and it prohibits the use of authority to influence or interfere with the disclosure of information under the whistleblower law. It extends the individual remedies and penalties to pick up new coded language for the whistleblower law, and it prohibits reprisals for disclosure of improper government activities and establishes a complaint procedure. Page R76, at the top of the page, House Section 22, this was a Representative Mullery bill that says any provision in a contract between a sales representative who deals with in plumbing equipment or supplies, that there can't be an express waiver provision in that says, and this says that there, if there is, the contract is void. Section 25 of the 23 of the House and Section 61 of the Senate begin some of the plumbing board changes, and up through line 67, 27 of the House and 57.2 of the Senate, the language we believe is the same, but we haven't had a chance to go through that with Senate staff. Section 24 was an amendment added in the Finance Committee, and it prohibits, this is my personal favorite, that mechanical devices and fittings with internal moving parts are prohibited from installation in plumbing venting systems, and that water-free urinals are prohibited. Page R77. That warped appeal to me.
Please go on.
Madam Chair and members,
another page, please.
Section 25 of the House and Section 62 of the Senate. This is plumbing board language, and again, based on our initial review, this language and the language on page R78 up to fees and finances are the same. On page R78, the language on fees and finances in the House bill, the House took out the language that said the board can set the fees, because we were advised that there is a statutory requirement that the board can't. So our language reflects that. And the appropriation in the House bill is limited to fiscal year 2008-2009. Page R79, Subdivision 4, is the transfer of authority to the plumbing board. The language in the bills on that is the same as is the first meeting and appointment deadlines to the plumbing board. R79, Section 26, is a transfer of authority from the Commissioner of Health to the plumbing board and to the Department of Labor and Industry, but the House has language beginning on line 13 that says no city or town may require a license for persons that are performing building, sewer, or water service installation who have completed a pipe laying training as described by the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. Page R80, House Section 27, is the language that says a license is not required for persons who have completed pipe laying training, and is new language about restricted journeyman plumber and restricted master plumber, and prescribes the work that they can do. And in beginning on line 71.10, says that in cities and towns with a population of fewer than 5,000, according to the federal census, a restricted master plumber. And that is new language, I believe. Representative Mahoney, that was partly from Representative Mullery's bill and 1208, the construction code bill. Page R80.
Go on.
Section 28 of the House and Section 65 of the Senate, it's just a transfer of authority from the Commissioner to the Plumbing Board, and this is the journeyman exam. Section 29 on page R81, this establishes a new restricted plumber's license. It establishes the fee and the use of the license, the renewal period, et cetera. And this has applications to work in cities and towns of under 5,000 population. Page R82, Section 30, is new reciprocity language for plumbers who are licensed in states that have standards similar to the state of Minnesota. They have, if they're licensed there, they can receive a temporary license in the state of Minnesota and have 5 years to comply with the requirements of our section. Page R82, Section 31 of the House and Section 66 of the Senate is the same language, and this again deals with the transfer from the Commissioner of Health to the Plumbing Board and the Department of Labor and Industry. And that's the same language.
And Madam Chair,
Ms. Baker,
I'll continue with the next few. Page R83, Senate side, Section 79, this language actually creates the construction code fund that we've talked about earlier in other sections, that it's going to consolidate the fees and permit fees and section fees, et cetera, from different building codes, construction codes. Section 80, contract recovery fund, and this goes on for several pages, sets up a fund to compensate owners or lessees of residential real estate who have gotten a judgment against someone who's done work on their house that, and they got a judgment saying there's grounds of fraudulent, deceptive, or dishonest practices, or failure of performance, or conversion of funds. And this has a detailed way for these homeowners to apply for funds from this to be compensated. And then the next one is, that goes through page R88. And the next one would be the house, section 32.
Members, this section 32 deals with tough person contests and puts them under the regulation of American Boxing Commission rules. It requires contestants in tough person contests to have a physical exam prior to the fight, and rounds are limited to 2 minutes with a maximum of 4 total rounds, and officials have to be licensed. Mm-hmm. Section 33 requires that mixed martial arts, ultimate fight contests, and similar events are subject to the boxing board. Section 34 is the licensing requirement and changes the language a bit to say that the license issued after the effective date of this act is valid for 1 year from the date it is issued. Under current law, it expired December 31st of the year it was issued. Section 35 is an amended fee schedule for the Boxing Commission that also includes some of these new martial arts and ultimate fighting events.
Madam Chair, page R90, section 86 is just one more section that is just basically making more technical changes having to do with the construction code fund, just changing things are now paid to the Department of Administration and now it's going to be to the Department of Labor and Industry.
Madam Chair, members, page R90, section 36 are the House repealers. The repealers deal with chapter 176.042 and 268.035 deal with independent contractor qualification language that is in the workers' compensation law and unemployment insurance law. The independent contractor language in this bill consolidates those qualifications into one section of law, so the other two are repealed. Section 326.45 repeals the language that has licensing requirements for plumbers that operate in cities with populations of less than 5,000. Page R91, Article 5 in the House begins the high pressure piping language. Section 1 of the House, Section 67 of the Senate is the same. Section 3 of the House and Section 69 of the Senate are the same. Section 4 of the House and Section 70 of the Senate are similar. The differences deal with how fees are dealt with, and we said that the commissioner in consultation with the board can set the fee, and the House language allows the fee to be set by the board. And this is, again, the fee-setting issue versus the statutory requirement of who can set fees. Page R92, House Section 5, Senate Section 71. Through this page, the language is the same. Page R93, fees and finances are very similar language, but again, this is recommend in the House versus set, fees being set by the board in the Senate. R93, Section 6 of the House, Section 72 of the Senate is the transfer of authority from labor and industry to the board, or in conjunction with the board. The language is the same. Page R94, Section 7 of the House and 73 of the Senate. This is conforming language, which is the same. Page R95, Section 8 of the House. This is the reciprocity, licensing reciprocity for high-pressure piping licenses. R95, Section 9 of the House, Section 74 of the Senate are the same. Section 10 of the House and 75 of the Senate are the same. This is the part that transfers from the department to the board for revoking high-pressure piping license. Section 11 of the House and Section 76, this is again fee language, which is quite similar except for the language relating to the House has consultation of the board, and the Senate allows the board to actually deal with the fees.
Mr. Jensen.
On page R96, Section 77 deals with residential contractors and remodelers, requiring them to pay a fee to the contractor's recovery fund. And it, as you can see, it eliminates some of the requirements there based on sales or gross receipts to the individuals. And I think on line 66.27, it says Department of Commerce. We need to review that. Maybe that should say labor and industry expenses if the code consolidation goes forward.
And Madam Chair, on page R97, Senate side, Section 78 is more technical language changes having to do with the construction code consolidation.
Madam Chair, Ms. Newman, that same page, Senate Section 12, House Section 87, this is the transfer of authority to the Board of High Pressure Piping for rules and specified licenses and permits that are currently in effect stay in effect until they would be changed by the board. Section 13 of the House and Section 88 of the Senate have requirements for the first meeting of the new board and a deadline by which the board appointments have to be made, and that language is the same. Section 12 of the House and Section 87 of the Senate are the same. Page R98 is the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. Section 1 of the House and Section 56 of the Senate are the same. They reduce the board membership from 13 members to 10 and strike language that says that the Senate Majority Leader and Speaker of the House and the Governor, the appointments by those, and that the must be non-legislators who reside in the area.
I used to be on that board.
Not as a citizen.
As a representative. Mm-hmm. I remember that. Please go on, Ms. Newman.
Page R99, Section 2 of the House and Section 57 of the Senate are virtually identical except for a couple of punctuation and the use of which and that, which we use that or that we use differently. Those are the substantive differences there. And this has to do with expenditures from the Taconite Economic Development Fund. It says that, and that the commissioner can only release the funds if the expenditure is approved by a majority of members of the IRRRB, and if the producer uses the money, which or that has been released from the fund prior to the date following final enactment, to, this is Representative Rupavina, help me, this is to make sure that it's stationary equipment rather than rolling stock.
Members and Madam Chair,
Representative Rupavina.
It deals with that, but it also deals with the actual approval of the project that are taking place in when we give the rebates to the mining companies with IRRRB money.
Members, page R100, section 3, contains appropriations from the Iron Range, the IRRRB fund, and it also on line 83.8 of the House language contains an appropriation to the city of Eveleth to for the Hockey Hall of Fame, provided that the Hall of Fame continues to operate in the city and that the money can't be used to supplant funding from other sources. Section 4 on that page renames the IRRRB board office in Eveleth as the Joe Begich Building.
Representative Mahoney.
Who's Joe Begich? Did someone explain that to me?
Madam Chair,
Representative Rupavina,
would you like to take that? Should I take it, or Senator Tomasoni? A legend.
Or Representative Clark.
Known to all of us. You've heard of the black pill.
Madam Chair.
The story of the black pill in the pocket.
He made... He fed the black pill if he...
Where he pulled it out all the time?
No. I don't know that story.
I'll tell you someday. I'll tell you. Please go on. On to electrical.
R101, Article 7 of the House bill in Section 1 begins the electrical board change language and... Section 1 has a new definition. It's direct supervision, and it means that an unlicensed individual is being supervised by a person that's licensed to do the work that's being supervised, and that during the entire workday, the licensed individual has to be physically present at the location where the unlicensed person is working. Section 2 on page R101 is... the composition of the new Board of Electricity, and it outlines their terms and who is on that. Page R102, Section 3, outlines the powers of the board and strikes the authority under current law to engage and fix the compensation of inspectors and to hire employees and the language related to the executive secretary of the board, but allows that the board can select from its members individuals to serve on other state advisory councils, boards, and committees. Page R103, Section 4 is language limited to power limited technician, and the change is made on page R104. It simply extends the deadline from the current law date of September 30th, 2005 to December 31st, 2007 for a person who submitted an application to take the power limited tech exam, that they do not have to meet the requirements, the education and training requirements that are set forth in this section above. Page R104, Section 5, this is again the unlicensed individuals and supervision by a licensed electrician. It's a lot of technical changes just from person to an individual, but does conform with the supervision language that's outlined above. Section 6, page R105, Section 6 of the House, and Section 58 of the Senate is the same language requiring the registration of unlicensed individuals who are doing electrical work in the state of Minnesota. Ms. Baker?
And, Madam Chair, on R105, Section 59 relates to Section 58 in that the unlicensed individual electrical work does have a license fee for $15 a year, and there are some other changes made in licensing requirements and fees raised for electrical electricians, electrical contractors.
Page R106, House Section 7 is reciprocity for electricians' licenses, and it allows the commissioner to enter into reciprocity agreements for personal licenses with another state if the board approves that, and then provides that a person that has a license in another state can get a personal license issued here without having to pass the examination if the applicant meets a number of requirements, including submitting an application and paying a fee and holding a valid license that's comparable.
And Madam Chair and
Ms. Baker,
R107, Section 60 on the Senate side, this increases fees on state electrical inspection, and this goes on for a couple of pages, raising fees on every page. Page R11, it ends on the top of page R112. And the next section would be a House Section 8 on R112.
Madam Chair and members, this is Ms.
Newman.
The repealer section. And I'm sorry, I can't remember what... 326.01 is the definition of special electrician, and 326.242 is the license... provides for the licensure of special electricians, and those are both repealed. Thank you. Page R113, Article 8 of the House bill is the apprentice board changes, and this is fairly technical in the name change from the Apprenticeship Advisory Council to the Apprenticeship Board. Madam Chair, page R114, Section 4, directs that if the commissioner refuses to accept, adopt, or issue a rule or other appropriate proposal that the board has come up with, the commissioner has to provide written notice of why they didn't adopt the rule or follow the board's proposal within 30 days after the board has submitted the proposal. Page R115, Madam Chair, through R122, these are appropriations that were in the Heritage Finance bill in the House. And they are appropriation riders that perhaps would be more appropriate for a spreadsheet discussion? Mm-hmm. Or would you like me to go through them?
I think we can wait on.
HR 123, Section 7 is gives authority. Currently, the Adjutant General in the state has the authority to repair battle flags. This expands it to the Minnesota Historical Society, and Subdivision 2 is a section that actually allows these flags to be given over to the Historical Society in custody, if you will, for repairing them. And Subdivision 3 specifies who has jurisdiction over flags from which wars. The Historical Society has jurisdiction over flags carried by Minnesota troops in the Civil War, the Indian War, and the Spanish-American War. The Adjutant General has jurisdiction over flags from any other
war or conflict. And do we have wars, or do we have flags from those other wars or conflicts?
Yes, Madam Chair.
We better fix them then, keep them in good repair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Let National Guard is make buying plastic flags from China. So what are we worried? What are we worried about the flag flying?
Because our school kids look at them when they go by in the rotunda when they've
Madam
given
Chair,
up their milk.
Put some plastic ones from China.
Madam Chair, these are wolf flags and they're stored over at the Historical Society about three stories down and flat and under glass.
I know, and there's one from Virginia.
I've seen it.
The state of or my hometown?
State of. They want it back.
This would be a good place to say they never can have
Please
it back.
Please continue. Ms. Lafitte.
Madam Chair, now that Ms. Newman's gotten completely hoarse, I'll do 5 seconds. The housing finance appropriations begin on R-124, and it is rider language and appropriations through... through 130, R-130 anyway. Actually, even on R-131, there's a one-time grant to Hennepin County for a computer model to be prepared by the Center for Urban and Regional Affairs at the U to identify in advance properties that are at risk of foreclosure to try to target resources.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Baker.
On page R-131, sections 81 and 82 are more technical cleanups for the construction code fund consolidation that goes through. Also on page R-132, section 83 is the same. And then go to the House.
Madam Chairman, members, section 4 of the House on page R-132 and section 84 in the Senate are identical. They just provide the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency with the authority to provide grants for operating costs of public housing, which they would need with some of the appropriations. Again, with regard to the challenge grant, the challenge housing challenge program, this would be page 133, section 5 in the House, section 85 in the Senate. This is very similar language that again provides them the authority that they need to carry out the appropriations that are made. On page 133, section 6 is a House-only provision. It adds disabled veterans and persons with disability to the list of people who are given priority for public housing projects. The priority system dates back to right after World War II, and the preference to disabled veterans is consistent with the preference for service persons that was provided at that time. It also changes an obsolete reference to aid to families with dependent children to provide for the reference to be the current law. And then finally, Section 7 in the House is a group to get together and evaluate whether corrective actions need to be taken to reduce mortgage foreclosures in the state. And it lists a group of members, including the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, Commissioner of Commerce, the Attorney General, Mortgage Bankers Association, Legal Services, the Minnesota Mortgage Foreclosure Prevention Association, and the Sheriff's Association.
Is there bonding or what?
Oh, Madam Chair, just the last. Page R-134, the effective date really goes without saying that this bill is going to be effective July 1st because it will automatically, because it's an appropriation unless some section here or there is specifically provided for otherwise, stating the obvious.
In the New Year, because the New Year.
Well, it is.
Well, thank you very much. Members of the Senate, members of the House, Senator Tomasoni and I talked about this earlier. If you would If there's something in here that you need more information of or that you want someone to explain more thoroughly at a later time about anything in here, just turn that in writing to your chair, and we will put the two lists together and decide when we will call them before us and give them a time period of how much time they would have to answer your questions. Is there any other business tonight?
Madam Chairman, just thinking about
Senator Tomasoni, about
a future meeting. I think tomorrow we will be getting targets.
You think so?
I was hoping that you were going to say, yes, we are. But if we aren't, there's really not much reason to meet tomorrow. But is there any... you guys will be in all day tomorrow, right?
If that's my understanding. And I would... I would be surprised if we got our target tomorrow.
Okay. It's probably, probably consistent
you know,
with what's been going on.
For how long we were on the floor today and all that kind of stuff, I can't imagine that they got to talk much.
Okay. And we'll just hold off on scheduling the next meeting until we actually can figure something out and be able to do some things and actually have three members on each side here.
Well...
I know, you guys did really good. I'm proud of you.
With that said,
we can loan you.
Yeah, I saw it. Just said, Moe, you should come over here. So, other than that, I don't have anything.
Okay. If not, thank you so much for your patience. Thank you for your attention. This meeting is adjourned.